Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Bonsai Stuff Podcast. Season 6, Episode 4, if you can believe it. Scott Martin from Bonsai Matsu. As always, I truly appreciate you listening in. This episode of the podcast, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've been doing around my yard, which is some work on a lot of Australian natives lately. It's a really good time for them, as well as some figs, some ficus, doing some work there as well. And very excitedly, when this podcast comes out, I'll actually be in New Zealand, having been asked to head over the ditch to the land of the long white cloud to do some workshops and demonstrations, that sort of thing, down in Christchurch. And I can tell you what, I am super excited, very excited for this this opportunity to meet some new bonsai folk and get to see a different part of the world, which will be lovely. And through this podcast, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I've been doing in the background in preparation for these workshops and these demonstrations overseas, and getting to just chat a little bit about what I do in the lead up to these things and the preparation, and it's quite timing when you've got new stock, because I do the same sort of process when I'm going to work a new tree for myself as to what I'm going to do when I'm doing a demonstration. The time frame might be a little bit different because your demonstrations are under a little bit of a constraint, but it's still the same sort of process. So I thought that would be interesting as part of this podcast to run through that process with you. So get yourself a cuppa, strap yourself in, make sure your eyes are on the road if you're driving, and let's get into it. Okay, so first up, with some of my goal setting for 2024 for Bonsai Matsu, one of the things that I was asked a lot last year was, when am I getting back onto YouTube? When am I going to do something? When are you doing some videos? So if you haven't already noticed, there's been a bit of content already. So we're only into the end of Jan, start of Feb, and I think I've done 3 new videos up online with a plan to do plenty more. So it does take quite a lot of time in the background. Anyone who hasn't put a video up onto YouTube, it's quite a process to do it, but I'm getting quicker. So there's still plenty more to come. And the latest is this series that I'm doing called A Day in the Life. So it's more designed around giving a bit of an insight when I work on trees or what I do around the yard, that sort of thing, a bit more casual than some of the learning videos that I've put together. But still should be really informative and good quality for you to spend some more time focusing on bonsai in your downtime. So around the yard, what I've been doing lately is working on some of my Australian natives. One in particular, which I did the video on recently, was a big Banksia marginata with lovely little small leaves called a mini marge variety. And it's got beautiful flowers on it this time of the year, and God, geez, I love some of our natives. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, wherever you're based, if you focus on your natives, you'll get some really, really positive results. And I was just talking with someone the other day too about natives, Australian natives, and they can be quite a lot of work. So just be mindful of the commitment that you make to the number of trees that you put into your collection. The Australian natives in Australia, in your local, especially if they're local to where you're living, and they love that area, they love that climate, you'll find that your scissors will be ground down quite quickly with the amount of work that you've got to do. I wanted to talk about the pruning work that I've been doing at this time of the year on my natives, and it's not in my back of my head. I don't necessarily work on my natives at this time of the year to change the structure of the trees or to design them. It's more that I'm doing a lot of work at the moment on improving the ramification of these trees. And so a lot of the pruning work that I'm doing is not labor intensive. It's quite quick. I can get in there and make my cuts quite quickly on the stuff that's extended quite a long way and push the foliage back. But when I'm making those cuts, I'm trying to improve the ramification or develop the ramification of the tree, which means where you want the tree to finish, always cut back a little bit further than that. So, you know, I'm using my hands in the shape of a balloon at the moment. And if that's my ultimate shape, then push that balloon a little bit closer by a couple of centimetres, and that's where I'm cutting back to. So I'm always coming back and then allowing the next lot of growth that comes out fill the space that I want to improve or fill out the foliage size for that particular bonsai. If you prune to where you want to finish, as soon as you get that growth come, which will come, as soon as you get that growth come, you're going to be larger than what you'd hope for with your design. So it's really important when you're pruning, you're always cutting back and then allowing it to grow back into that space that you're wanting to fill with the growth of the tree. I find that that's a really common thing I'm doing with the natives now. And when I cut back, you know, if you're cutting something like one of the exotic species, a maple of, I'll just use that as an example again. If you're cutting back to a maple, you're coming back to the first pair of leaves and then allowing it to bud from there and push out. That's quite a simple process. With the natives, it's not quite so clear or cut and dry as to where you're pruning things back, because of the way the leaf structure grows often is not quite as simplistic as what they are on some of the other exotic species. So I generally get a rough feel for where I'm going to be cutting the trees back, and that's normally, you know, second, third-ish sort of leaf, but it may be also the length of the internode that I'm trying to create. If it's got a really long internode, regardless of the species, if it's pushed out a long way, you know, and by that I'm sort of saying maybe 3-4 centimetres on a highly refined tree, that internode's too long, I look to remove that part of the tree. If it's really short, it doesn't matter how many leaves are there, let's say it's only, you know, a centimetre, 10 mil thereabouts, the internode length that I'm trying to create, and there's a bucket load of leaves in that area, then I'll just cut to that point. I won't work my way through those leaves and go, oh, where's the second or third leaf on that? I'll go, that's roughly about the size internode that I want to create, and I'll cut there. Because I know that with the leafing habit of a lot of our natives, they sort of whirl around the branch and it'll shoot from all those areas. That said, also the general guideline of the 1-2, you know, where one branch divides into two, I find that with the Australian native species, that's not always something that I'm focusing in on. So there might be, as it gets to the really ramified side of things and you're getting into that tight little dense growth, you might find that coming out of each branch spot might be 2, 3, 4, 5 sort of things coming from that one area, and that's fine, that's okay. I do try and thin it out to allow sunlight and air to get into those inner areas of the tree, but I'm not as fastidious as what I am with, say, a black pine, where it's got to be 1-2. I'd never go more than 2 at any one junction on a black pine. With the natives, I'm a little bit more flexible with it, where I might have 3 things in there. The downside to it, and what I've got to be aware of, and what everyone should be aware of when you're pruning like that, is that you may get swelling at those junctions because there's a lot happening. There's a lot of branches being fed from that one spot. So ultimately, you will come back to a 1-2 sort of relationship, but I don't stress about it every time when I'm pruning my natives. You'll find that I sort of flick through very quickly. If I find that an area is starting to swell, then I'll go, yep, I've got to take action and start to remove that out. But those knuckles and lumps and bumps and all that sort of thing that I get on my natives, I don't mind that. I actually quite like that and find that look appealing when I'm working with the trees and I'm looking through them. So I'm not as strict about it as what I am with some of the exotic species when I'm pruning. So I'm a bit more flexible, and that's just, I suppose, where experience of seeing these things come into it. I like a nice full area. I like everything growing in the sort of same direction on a pad. So if it's growing a funny angle, I'll remove it. If it's thickening, I'll get rid of it. If the internode length, if the length of that branch is too long, regardless of where it's coming from or what it's doing, I'll get rid of it, because once I get to that point where I'm starting to ramify things or even develop branches on a tree, I don't like that long stretch of a branch and then having foliage on it. I like to have it where it's very controlled and it's a lot shorter in length than something's just been allowed to push out. So I'm pretty strict when it comes to that side of things, developing any tree really, but especially with the natives, once I start working them, I try and keep them so they're nice and short. So another species I've been working at the moment too is the ficus, the figs. We've got nice warm weather in Melbourne. You know, it seems to be getting warmer and warmer towards the latter part of the afternoon and nice and fresh in the morning. But our overnight temps are up there. So the figs love to grow at this time of the year for us. And they've been through anything that's going to go through the defoliation process has been through it. And so at this point in time, I'm generally dealing with a lot of new buds, stuff that's back budded, stuff that I've cut off before that's shot out, that there's just knuckles of growth left, right and centre with these things. So I'm just going through. A lot of it's really light, simple, easy work where I'm rubbing off, you know, extra buds that have popped up around the place, or I'm making sure that the growth is in the correct direction. It's got the right flow to where I want those branches to go. I don't necessarily look to always be wiring every single little branch that I've got on my trees. I think that's a bit of overkill. As I've said it before, but my primary approach with wiring is to get my primary branches in place, work on a couple of the secondaries with wiring as well, and then let the next stage, the tertiary branches, suddenly start to grow a bit more naturally, and I'm pruning them into direction. So my branches have a real feel for being exactly where they should be, and if they don't, then I use a bit of a guy wire to bring them back. Secondary branches look like they're naturally coming off but may have been wired, but that finer growth, that delicate stuff, I like that to look really natural with how it grows. So when I'm pruning that lighter stuff, I'm pruning it to make sure that it's growing in the right direction, to make sure that it's flowing the way that I want it to flow. And it's, you know, if that's an up and out or continuing along a direction, anything that's growing the wrong way gets cut off, or I look for a bud where I can prune it back to it and redirect that new directional growth of the branch to be going out where I want it to go. So that seems to be a lot of what I'm doing with my ficus at the moment. I'm not going through doing another defoliation of any of the trees because, you know, we've only really got another month of summer, and then we head towards autumn. So I don't like to take the risk of pushing things and having too finer or delicate growth that hasn't hardened off before we get to some cooler weather. If you're further up north, then I presume you just defoliate your figs 24/7, 365 days a year because you've got the warmer weather. Down here in Melbourne, in Victoria, we necessarily don't always have that, and we can get some cold snaps come through when autumn does hit. So even though the days might be nice and warm and we still have nice daytime temperature, it's those nighttime ones that really seem to catch you out and have caught me out before, where you'll do more damage to that new growth than good. So that's what I've been working on a lot around the yard as of late. Sorry for the interruption, and I really hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I'm enjoying making it. Makes the bonsai world feel a little bit smaller and a lot more cozy. Anyway, I'd love for you to become a supporter of the podcast by subscribing for as little as $3 a month. This support will go directly towards the cost of producing this podcast, and it's entirely optional. The link to become a supporter is in the episode notes for each edition. Now that's over, let's get into the podcast. New Zealand, thank you for having me. I am so excited. It's a country that I am ashamed to say that I have never visited as an adult. Been there as a kid, long time ago, but never had the pleasure of visiting. It's always been on the to-do list, especially the South Island where I'm heading to, and I'm just pumped. So I'll use a future podcast to have a chat about my time in New Zealand and reflect on it and talk about my learnings over there and what I've got to see and all that sort of stuff. But this podcast, I thought I was, I'm doing demonstrations in New Zealand, and as part of those demonstrations, I feel that I need to be prepared. When I have people come into the workshop, I get presented trees on the spot. Often the people that present the trees have looked at them for months, maybe years, and they know the trees inside and out. But when they get put in front of me, it's like, okay, what would you do? Quick, go. And I find that I have to make a decision on these things very, very quickly, which I can do. It's not a gripe. It's just the way that it works for me. Sometimes I'll sit and I'll think and I'll go, let me just circle back to it and I'll think about it for another couple of minutes and then I'll come back if it's an important decision. But when I do demonstrations, I like to be prepared. And I thought it would be interesting to run through my process because, as I said earlier, it could be – it is a process that I go through in my head anyway when I'm working on a new tree for myself in my own collection, and I want to make sure that I'm going to be doing it as best as I possibly can. So I thought that I would run through my process for doing a demonstration, see if that's interesting. First up, the main thing that I like to do is to obviously get to view the stock. So don't make it a surprise. And even though, you know, you're another world away from me, I always ask for photos. And when the photos come in, there might be a range of different trees that I can consider to work on, luckily, which is nice. And then when I narrow it down to what is it, what sort of tree that needs to be worked on or would like to be worked on, it's okay. From that one tree, can you send me multiple views? Like spin that tree around, look down, look up, look from a distance, left, right, back, front, whatever it is, just so I can have a look at the tree itself, because I find that that's probably the most important thing that that you've got to get to see is one photo of a tree, a front view of a photo, what is perceived to be the front of the tree may not be enough for you to get a good feel on it. And what I try and avoid now when I do demonstrations is any surprises. You know, so let's say you get a photo of a tree, you look at it and go, yep, okay, perfect. See the front, trunk, primary branches, yep, no worries, that's it. I know what to do with this one. And then you get there and suddenly around the back of the tree there's an issue or there's a massive part of dead wood or something needs to be filled or the apex is leaning so strongly to the back that really it's the front that you've chosen is an impossible dream or it's pigeon breasting or whatever it is. It's there's something happening with the tree. So I find that viewing the stock from multiple angles is really good. And then what I do is I choose a rough plan. So on let's say I get sent, I don't know, pick half a dozen photos. So the six photos that can get sent through to me, I'll probably narrow it down to maybe two or three different options that I see on that tree. And then through my device, my phone, I will generally take those photos and manipulate them from the perspective of angle. So before I do any work on the tree, I'll take the static photo that I've received and I'll start to rotate it left and right so I can see visually what it's going to look like potentially if I change the angle on that tree. So then from this angle change, then I'll nut down to maybe two or three again that I like, that I think, yep, that's got really interesting. And then I will start to sketch out a plan. I will use the paint tool on your phone to suddenly start drawing and say, okay, well, apex here, trunk line there. Then if I did this with that branch, I did that with that branch, and I set pads to be in this area, what would that look like potentially? So it's always these plans that I start to work through in my head. And then what I'll do is from those options, I'll still keep it open. I'll still keep it that it's viable to change my mind whenever I'm in front of the tree, because I think that's the most important part is to not lock yourself in definitively to something until you can actually physically see that stock and you can touch it and you can let the tree talk to you and tell you exactly which way it would like to go. I think that's really important. So once I've got these plans in place, then I nut through what I need as part of my toolkit to be able to make what I want to have happen. And I make a list for myself of what tools and what equipment do you need. You know, if you're doing things that are going to involve serious bends on a tree, then okay, for that bend to be made, what do you need? Do you need a jack? Do you need steel bar? What is it you're going to use to actually make that bend happen? Is it just going to be guy wise? If it's guy wise, does there need to be a screw put in somewhere? Is there going to be a drill and a screw available? All right, so if you're making that bend, then do you need to protect the tree in any form? And if you do, how are you going to protect it? All right, so you need to use raffia, you need to use tape, you need to use whatever it is that you're going to be using. So then I go through, once I've made the list, and start compiling all the product that I need to do the job. So, for instance, you know, going to New Zealand, I've packed all the raffia, packed the tape, got the steel bar in the travel pack. So I hope I don't get I'll let you know, but I hope I don't get pulled up by customs. I'm entering a country with, you know, okay, what's in this little magic case of yours with all these sharp implements and steel bars? What are you planning for your trip to New Zealand? Anyway, and the other thing that I have in the back of my head is don't be boring for the viewers. You know, my job is to not only complete a task, but to be entertaining and informative too, and to make it that people walk away from whatever it is that I do in any shape or form and say, that was worth me investing my time. That was worth me sitting there and listening and seeing what Scott did, because I got X out of it. You know, and whatever that is, it might be a 1 second snippet on wire application. It could be, you know, wetting the raffia before, you know, the process that's got used to wet the raffia before he applies it to the tree. Whatever it is. It doesn't need to be everything. I don't have that as the intention, but as long as every single person that sits there and gives me their time walks away with something valuable, then, you know, I feel pretty happy about it. So I do take these things very seriously, and I do prepare thoroughly for them. The next part of what I do is to research the material. You know, going somewhere different, you may have different stock, different local species that are presented to you that you may not have. It happens in Australia. You know, you travel around Australia and there's different species that grow in different areas and that I may not have worked with or been completely familiar with, but I have to be when I'm in that position of working on a tree, then I've got to have done some research and you know, the internet's your friend and foe, but you can learn a lot about the horticultural requirements of species, not necessarily the techniques for looking after them as a bonsai, because that might not be correct, it may or may not, and the care guides, you know my thoughts on care guides, but you can definitely learn a lot about where these things grow, how much sun they like and what conditions they thrive in and where they struggle and look at the climate that they're based in, and you can pretty much work with that to build a framework for designing these trees and how they're going to grow. So I love to do a lot of research and get to know the material. So, you know, it's the tree, the shape, the plan for the tree. Have I got the implements? Have I got the tools that I need? Am I prepared for that part of it? I've got to do research on the material as well, so I don't just walk in there blind and say, hey, you know, can you tell me about this, as I'm snapping branches left, right and centre, because they're a brittle species as well. The other thing that I like to do is to structure the demonstration that I've got to do based on the available time. So if someone says to you, you've got 3 days, well, then you take 3 days to get the work done. Someone says, okay, you've got 30 minutes, well, then it's a very different demonstration in 30 minutes as what it is in 3 days. So I've got to make sure that somewhere in between you're meeting objectives. And anyone that knows me would know that I'll never rush a demonstration or anything that I do with a tree at the expense of the tree. So if you've got 30 minutes, well, then you'll only get to do 30 minutes worth of work. So it might be one thing that I focus on. It might be, okay, well, in this part, for this part of the demonstration, I'm going to focus on the key bend. That's it. I'll show you that. I'll show you how it works. I'll teach you what I do, and we'll get that part done. But at the end of the demonstration, realistic expectation is going to be in that period of time, you are not going to have a finished bonsai sitting in front of you, because that's going to be nearly impossible. So let's focus in on one thing and make sure that we get that done right. If you've got long enough time, well, then you take your time to do these things. You know, fibers need to stretch. Everyone needs to get ready for it. You've got to make sure that the tree is able to survive whatever is it that you're doing. So I always look at the time that I've got, work backwards and say, okay, during this time, I will be able to, based on my experience of working with, you know, stock like this, be able to achieve this. So always set the expectations nice and early. The next part is, once I've got all that done, I've got the plan, I've got, you know, time, I've got tools, I've got everything that I need, the next most really, the most important part of what I can do, as I said before, is to get in front of the stock, spend some time. So preferably the day before the demo, if I can't be, the day before, half an hour before the demonstration, whatever it is, just get to have a look, review everything. I like to make sure in my head that I've got things very clearly set. And if I'm going to be doing some major stuff, like, you know, everyone will have seen the demos or the YouTube videos where you see a bit of raw material and someone walks in with branch cutters and all of a sudden, snap, they've cut off three or four things and you go, how did you get to that point? How did you know, like, did you just literally walk in the room and in microseconds go snap, 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 cut off and gone and suddenly the whole thing looks different? Like, how do I learn that? Like, how do I get that skill? How do I get that vision? How do I get that foresight? And I can tell you that that comes from this preparation and this time that you spend before it. So whereas you may have a piece of material in front of you and you look at it for a month before you do anything, you know, you take it along to a workshop with someone and say, I think this is it. I think I want to cut that. I want to keep this. I want to do that. The demonstrator, well, me, I can't talk for myself. What I do is, even though when you get in front of that demonstration, in the demonstration, you go, okay, look, I've got 30 minutes. I've got to get onto this thing. I'll have spent hours. I'll have spent days beforehand prepping, planning, thinking. So when I walk in there and go cut, 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 I know that I've covered things up on plans. I've gone, yeah, okay, so I'll do this and that can come to here and then this will go to there and, oh, hang on a minute, that one needs to go around here, so that'll have to come off. So it's all part of the planning process. And that learning or that picking up that technique where you can cut branches off straight away, forget it. Don't do it. I don't encourage anyone to look at a tree and go cut, cut, cut. Once you've cut it off, it's a little bit more difficult to put it back on if you suddenly get to the design a little bit further down the track and go, yep, probably shouldn't have cut that one off so hastily. I probably should have taken my time and done, you know, some other things first and checked whether I needed that branch or not. So it's a bit like seeing a magician that waves a magic wand and drops a curtain and everything disappears. It's a lot of thought and a lot of planning goes into these things beforehand. So don't be fooled that whoever it is that's doing the demonstration, you know, has suddenly had the 1 second view of the tree and gone, yep, I can see exactly where this thing's going. A lot of work goes into the background. So I like to make sure before I do a demo that the plan's going to work. You know, get in there, look at the branches I'm going to cut off, cover them up. Will this move down to there? Is there, you know, things I need to consider, like maybe there's dead wood on the branches, so then bending them becomes nearly impossible without them breaking. You know, maybe I need to change my plan. Is my plan intact for what I want to achieve? And if it is, well, great. If it's not, then I need to change things. And the final thing that I do is to get into it and just make sure that I'm really clear on my plans and my objectives to everyone that's sitting there. Don't do something, cut it off, and then have someone go, why did you do that? You know, I'd rather say, okay, so I'm doing this because I'm going to do this. This is my plan. So everyone can go, oh, okay, and follow along with the story or the process that I'm going to go through for this tree. So like I said, this was written down because I thought it would be interesting for everyone to hear how I prepare for demonstrations and what goes into it in the background, that it's not just a, you know, magic wand and some bonsai fairy dust and presto, there we go. There's a lot goes into it in the background. And also you are limited by the material. Not everything that you work on is going to be a beautiful, magnificent bonsai at the end. Sometimes they are, and that's great, but a lot of work's gone into getting them to that point where they are that perfect bonsai when they finish. But a lot of things, it's a step in the process. It's a, you know, it's another foot forward for this thing to say, okay, well, now you've set this in place, the next part of the plan is going to be this. And that's part of what I do with demonstrations as well, is make it really clear and say, you know, the next part of the plan for this tree is going to be this. So it might be a 6-month plan process in the future. It might be 12 months, might be 2 years, might be 5 years. But as long as it's on the right path now, then I think that makes it a pretty successful demonstration. But where this conversation gets really interesting is, this is the same process I go through when I'm designing one of my own trees or I'm working on something new for myself. So you can take photos of your trees before you work on them. You can look at them from different angles. You can draw trunk lines. You can remove branches. You can, you know, position things here and there by drawing them onto a picture. And you can develop a plan and make sure that before you start doing the work, do you have everything you need? Have I got all the tools that I need? Do I need something extra? Make sure that you are ready to go before you start working on trees. So I thought it would be interesting to share the process with you anyway. Must admit, I'm like a little school kid at the moment. I'm so excited for New Zealand and like I said, getting to expand the bonsai network and share the bonsai love too with people in another country. It's very exciting, very very exciting for me, and I'm hoping that that I do myself proud and that everyone that comes along and spends their time with me gets something really positive out of it too, because it's great, this bonsai world that we live in. We are only a quick message away from each other, which is lovely. And I encourage you, you know, stay in touch. I was chatting with a fella the other day and helping with a tree in Iran. The bonsai world is extremely close and connected, and it's just that love that we have for these beautiful little trees that we want to spend our time with and share our lives with. It's really nice. So I'm nervous about heading away from my collection for a period of time as well, but I have upgraded cameras around the yard. I've double checked watering system. I don't know why, but I think I'm just being paranoid because I've done it all with summer anyway. But you know, just to make sure that, and triple check, you know, being prepared, as I say, for these things, prepare for the worst and hope for the best is definitely the way to go with your watering and your bonsai care network that you've got around the place. And I'm extremely lucky. I've got a beautiful family, some lovely daughters that pitch in and help when I'm not around the place, so that certainly makes life better for me. But if you have any natives, Australian natives in your collection, it's worthwhile having a walk around the yard at the moment if you haven't spent time with them, because they should need a haircut if they haven't had one in recent times. The growth, the rate of these things is just brilliant, just fantastic. And if you haven't had a look at the video I've just put up on YouTube for the Banksia marginata, then jump on and have a bit of a look, because it's a doozy. It's got some lovely flowers on at the moment that just make me smile. How many times I see them just to view them, you know, day in, day out with my coffee in the morning as the sun's glaring through the sky. I love it. It's just beautiful. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sticking around, as always. The subscribers to the Bonsai Stuff podcast, I mean it. Thank you very much. I couldn't do it without you. I do appreciate the support and the messages that come through. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. If you haven't subscribed, please consider it. It continues to fund and push this podcast along, which is pumping out on a daily, on a weekly basis now. And I can tell you, it's always in my thoughts. I have this notebook that I write down stuff all the time in it. So there's plenty more content to come along. Thank you for sticking around. Give the trees a cuddle for me, and as always, until next time, happy bonsai.